It is truly intelligent media for the politically aware.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the day from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom?
The future is uncertain. I know this. Death is inevitable. I know this. But one thing is certain, as free men, it is our right to live unencumbered and in peace. And those times are quickly drawing to an end. And in these times, peace is certainly an illusion, and as the chains grow tighter, our ability to slip those chains increase incrementally with every passing moment. Inaction is no longer an option. It's time to raise our voices like a cacophony of thunder and lightning and tell the masters no more. And this is Nighthawk, and I say, for myself, no more. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, because the freedom is slipping away.
All right, welcome to the show, everybody. This is For Liberty. I am your host, Nick, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, revolution.radio, iTunes, Zeno.fm, and Roku TV we're on now, too. And plus a bunch of others that, of course, I can never remember because I never write them down because my organizational skills are not quite up to the level of secretary yet. Be sure to go to the website. Sign in the chatsy, get in the room with everybody, start tossing ideas around. And if you got something for sale, pick up one of the ad spots. And if you see something in the ad spots that you want to get, pick that up too. It helps keep us on the air either way. And as always, if you got some change burning a hole in your pocket, find it under the seat of your car, in the cushions of your couch, under the bed. Or if you pick some up off the streets of San Francisco, please wash and disinfect first, but hit that donation button up at the top of the page and send it our way. We are 100% listener supported, and we need all the help we can get because we don't get tons of money to fail miserably like CNN has been doing lately. And as a matter of fact, the CNN doughboy is about to lose his job, but now see, I'm kind of torn. The guy's an idiot, and you know who I'm talking about, Brian Stelter. Okay, he's an idiot. He's a good little card reader, says what he's supposed to say, and then he tries to put on his serious face. and make everybody think that he actually knows what he's talking about when he's got hasn't got two brain cells to rub together. But I'm kind of torn. There's that part of it, which annoys the living hell out of me, but at the same time, there's the comedic aspect of it when he does exactly the same thing and you can't help but laugh at him because it is absolutely entertaining. Listening to this guy actually act like he believes what he's telling you. So we're going to see what happens with the fake stream media, CNN, because they're going through a massive shakeup. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do and how many of the other fake stream media outlets follow suit, especially the big three alphabets. But we got to get into this. It's never going to stop. It always makes headline news whenever you see something like this happen, these shootings that are going on. And now, of course, the Senate has just dropped their version of the Safe Schools Act. Of course, it's not going to do anything for safety, but they renamed it to where is it? To make our community safer. It's a bill to make our community safer. It hasn't even got a number attached to it yet. The short title of it is, this act may be cited as the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act. Now, somebody please explain to me when our government, especially recently, and when I say recently, I say somewhere in the last 50 years, when have they ever done anything to make our community safer? It seems like every time they stick their nose into people interacting with each other or just conducting, like owning a business or whatever, they never make it safer. They always make it worse. Case in point, Chicago, New York, Los Angeles, San Francisco, St. Louis. Anywhere the government gets some programs involved, everything goes to hell. It would be really nice if they would just read the body of the Constitution and stick to that. That's the instruction manual that they constantly ignore. And, of course, we had the turncoats in the Senate. You already know who they are. We've already mentioned their names. I'll mention them again here in a minute. But they actually cited, I mean, remember the Republican Party supposed to be the opposition party to the communists. Oh, excuse me, I mean Democrats. And they're not. They're doing exactly the same thing. There's a lot of them. I think I can count on one hand, if you want to consider that to be a lot, who are actually doing what they're supposed to be doing, or at least trying to do what they're supposed to do. And they get thrown aside by all the rhinos, all the sellouts, the turncoats, the traitors that want to make sure that that cash cow keeps flowing. That was one of the big reasons they wanted to get rid of Donald Trump. He picked their pockets. He dried them up. Not entirely, but he was working on it. And again, don't sit there and categorize me as a massive Trump supporter as 50-50 with the guy. I like Donald Trump. He was a hell of a lot better than what we got now, a guy who can't even ride a bicycle. I remember, once you ride a bicycle, you never forget unless you're Joe Biden. But we've had the same people. Utah should be embarrassed for having Mitt Romney as their senator. Kentucky should be ashamed to have Mitch McConnell as their senator. I don't believe it's North Carolina, should be completely embarrassed and ashamed. They got Lindsey Grahamnesty as their senator. But you know what? They voted for him. You get what you pay for. So they put this out, and again, it's filled with all kinds of God knows what. A lot of it, if you read the bill, I just, matter of fact, got this thing, the transcript of it, the actual text of it, probably 20 minutes ago. So I haven't had a chance to run through the entire thing. I've been scanning it while listening to Mitch on the Trump Assassination Files, which comes on right before my show, which is a great lead-in. There's a lot of money being sent to mental health issues, which, by the way, it's not a bad thing, but if you understand the way our federal government works, you know it's never going to get to where it's going or be used the way it's supposed to be. Access to Medicare, Medicaid, you know, Medicaid and whatever. They have pediatric mental health care access grants. Now, if you, I don't know what they're defining as pediatrics. I haven't got to that point yet. I was skipping around a lot, but pediatric usually means a small child. Small child who hasn't had a chance to figure out what mental health even is yet. They can barely tie their shoes, but here you go. When it comes to the firearms, well, we're going to stop illegal trafficking in Firearms Act. That's already illegal. The misdemeanor crime of domestic violence. Now, they're redefining what domestic violence, domestic partnership is, what your boyfriend is, how long you've been with him, are you still in a romantic relationship? Why? Because they want to implement the red flag gun laws through this, and they're going around without actually having to call it red flag gun laws, which, by the way, violate the Constitution, not just one time, but they violate three, no less than three, of the Bill of Rights, the Second Amendment, the Fourth Amendment, and the Fifth Amendment. And I'm going to run a really good analysis of that here in a minute. So there's a whole lot of things in here. Mental health and firearms provisions, children and family mental health services. So they're playing this off as like we're trying to get people the mental health they need. It's like, you know, the federal government needs to stay out of it. Leave that to the states, because the federal government really doesn't have any jurisdiction over it. Number one, if a kid is all messed up, yes, get him the help he needs. But how many times have we seen the education system ignore these kids who are absolutely going nuts? They ignore all the warning signs. They ignore the fact that a lot of them are on psychotropic drugs. Adam Lanza comes to mind. Why? Because they don't want to create any waves and make themselves look bad and you know, 100 different excuses that they come up with. And then when the kid comes in and pulls some stupid crap like shooting the place up, well, it's all the guns' fault and we have to take the guns and the scary-looking ones first, never mind what it does or how it functions. We have to get rid of the scary ones. I think these people who wanted to ban these guns, I think they're racist. They're racist because the gun is black. But I want to run this. This is William Kirk, who is the president of Washington Gun Laws, goes over the constitutional deficiencies of red flag laws, and which there are many, because I quite honestly, I don't know why he would say many, because just you didn't even have to add that word. The constitutional deficiencies of red flag laws, simply because they're completely unconstitutional anyway. You didn't really need to expound on that at all. And I'm going to say this, and I've said it again, I'll say it again. I've said it before. There is no such thing as a constitutional gun control law. It doesn't exist. Oh, but Nick, they're trafficking firearms. Yeah, that's already a crime. Okay, that's not a gun control law. That's a trafficking something illegal to begin with. That's already a crime under a bunch of other laws. Oh, but murder. Murder's already a crime. Okay, and you show me somewhere in the Second Amendment where it says the right to keep and bear arms shall be at the whim of the federal, state, and local governments. And if they decide you can't have any, well, then you don't get to be part of the militia. And you lose your rights simply because. It doesn't, well, I hate to break the news to some of these liberal morons. It doesn't say that. It never has said that. But they want it to say that, so they kind of interpret it that way. I've gotten arguments with people about this in political science class. Well, the Second Amendment's only about the militia. Let's have a sit down and let's have a discussion. Show me in there where the right, where it says the right of the militia. Well, it's right there in the first part, the a well-regulated militia. Show me where the right of the militia is in the Second Amendment. It says militia. Show me where the right. This is the circular argument you're going to get from these people. It never says. The first part of that is because you need a militia to secure a free state. Well, who is the militia made up of? It's made up of able-bodied people able to carry arms, which, by the way, goes way back into English law. We can even go back, God, over 1,000 years ago. When people were required to get their own arms because they were part of the militia that the crown could call up at any given time. The English army, by the way, did not beat back France. That was the militias, the local people who told you're gonna come fight with us and you don't have a choice. Our government our federal government has the right to call up the militias of the states. The militia is you, me, you know, depending on your age and your physical condition, you, me, and everybody else able to keep and bear arms. If you have your own, you are expected to bring them. And if we got invaded by somebody, well, then, yeah, I mean, there wouldn't really be much of an argument. But sending our money, troops, and our equipment over to other countries just to hand them off later on, well, that's not something I agree with, and I'm pretty much never going to do it again. So I'm gonna run this bit by William Kirk, who is gonna go over how much red flag gun laws simply just violate the Constitution drastically. And seriously, if it's ever implemented, I mean it already has been, but if we can get it into a federal court, hopefully we can get it to the Supreme Court, and they can turn around. The Supreme Court can turn around and say, no, you can't have that. But the Supreme Court, for whatever reason, is always pretty bad at taking on Second Amendment cases, unless you've got a real beef with it, or if your case is presented properly, but they almost never do it. I haven't quite figured that part out yet. But they maybe it's a lightning rod. I mean, look what's happening to them over the Roe v. Wade issue. They got people protesting outside their houses. They got somebody threatening to kill one of them. So that's going to be interesting to see when that happens. I think that's supposed to happen this week too, by the way. So, but remember, it's all you right-wing nut jobs that are the violent ones, not the leftist, Antifa, Black Lives Matter nut jobs who paint their hair 60 billion different colors. And basically, most of the women that you see that are protesting Roe v. Wade, I'm pretty sure that's never going to be at the top of their list of things to do anyway. But anyway, I kind of drifted off there. But here's William Kirk discussing red flag laws.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to Washington Gun Law TV. I am Washington Gun Law President William Kirk. Thanks for joining us. Well, as we know, we have been going through rather tumultuous times as it relates to guns, gun safety, gun violence, and of course, gun control. And last week we learned that an agreement in principle had been reached in the United States Senate, which would allow for the passage of some significant gun control legislation. Part of that was a national push for universal red flag laws around the country. Well, you've probably heard a lot of horror stories about them, and as someone who practices in a state that's had red flag laws for several years, let me tell you that most of those stories are in fact true. So today we're going to spend a few minutes talking about the many constitutional deficiencies of red flag laws. Okay, so the topic we're talking about again today is red flag laws, trying to get many of you around the country up to speed on how do red flag laws work, and more importantly, how do they not work? Why is this? Well, we know that the United States Senate has apparently agreed in principle on some gun control legislation, which would include federal funding for red flag laws throughout the nation. Now, currently, there are 19 states in the United States that do have red flag laws. Washington is being one of them. We've come up with a much more euphemistic term for them. We call them extreme risk protection orders, or ERPOs. But that means that there are 31 states currently in the United States that do not have red flag laws. Now, many of you around the country may not be familiar with what these laws are all about. What do they do? How do they work? And how bad are they? I know you're hearing a lot of horror stories. So what we're going to do today is we're going to kind of go through some of the constitutional arguments that are made about red flag laws. And as a person who's practiced in a jurisdiction for a while, I'm going to tell you what my impression of those are. Okay, so the minute any state legislature starts kicking around the idea of implementing red flag laws, those that are opposed to it are going to immediately scream that they are unconstitutional. Now, red flag laws have been challenged on a statewide level in several states. However, is there any significant opinion challenging the constitutionality of red flag laws in the federal courts, Court of Appeals, the United States Supreme Court? No, but we know that day is coming. But I think that the arguments of the unconstitutionality of red flag laws are actually well-founded. And in fact, I think many people are missing a potential third constitutional argument. Let's start with the most obvious. Do red flag laws violate the Second Amendment? Okay, well, just so we're clear, the Second Amendment reads, "A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed." And of course, to many, any time you strip someone of their Second Amendment rights, they're going to say that that on its face is a violation of their Second Amendment rights. Now, I believe that there are certain offenses, and certainly the law agrees with me, that there are certain offenses when you commit violent felonies, when you commit sexual offenses, when you commit other violent offenses, that you are, by operation of the law, going to lose your right to possess a firearm. And for many of those individuals, there is an opportunity at a later date to restore. However, in those instances, let us not forget that the individual was tried and found guilty under a court of law before those rights are stripped of them. And in this situation, under a red flag law, that is not the case. So, is it possible for red flag laws to encroach upon your right to keep and bear arms? It most certainly is. And why is that? Well, it's because of the violation of the other constitutional amendment that I think is even more severe, more acute, and more obvious in how red flag laws are carried out. So let's talk about the very obvious violations of one's Fifth Amendment rights through the use of red flag laws. So now we have to talk about the violation of your Fifth Amendment right of due process and how this occurs, not so much in the manner in which red flag laws are passed or the language contained in the laws, but in the procedural mechanisms used to effectuate them. This is where the greatest constitutional deficiency, in my opinion, occurs. Now, just so we're clear, the Fifth Amendment reads, "No person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless a presentment or indictment of a grand jury, except in cases arising in the land or naval forces or in the militia, when in actual service in time of war or public danger. Nor shall any person be subject for the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb." And then this is the part that we focus on here. "Nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation." Now, when we talk about due process of law, we actually break it down into two components. There is substantive due process. These are basic fundamental rights that we as Americans are all entitled to. Life, liberty, the ability to get married, the ability to work, the ability to travel freely around the country. These are fundamental, due process, substantive rights. We also have, and this is very important, and this is the rub here when it comes to the implementation of these red flag laws, is procedural due process rights, which means that in all instances, if we are going to be deprived of our life, our liberty, or our property, we are entitled to a notice and then a meaningful opportunity to be heard. And it is that last component, the meaningful opportunity to be heard, where I think one of the, some of the most grotesque violations of due process rights occur. You see, first of all, by claiming that these are civil hearings, not criminal in nature, it removes many of the constitutional protections afforded criminal defendants that are not afforded civil litigants. For example, the right to counsel. For example, the right to remain silent. Now, one could choose to remain silent at their extreme risk protection order or red flag hearing. However, once the petitioner, that is the person asking for the order, has made a prima facie showing, the burden then shifts to the respondent, the person who the order would be issued against, in order to disprove some of those allegations. So if the burden has initially been met to move forward, and the respondent chooses to remain silent, well, they will lose that hearing. So how does it work in Washington, and how is it likely to work in your states? Well, the petitioner will either be a family or household member or a law enforcement agency. Let me repeat that. The petitioner, the person asking for the order, will either be a family member, household member, or law enforcement agency, because in Washington state, that's the limitation by statute. Obviously, your states can get far more creative than that. Once they do that, they will file a petition for what's called a temporary order. Now, this is where the first procedural due process deficiency occurs, because that order, once the petitioner fills out and makes all the salacious allegations against the respondent, he did this and he did that and he said he was going to do this and he's got these guns here and these guns there and all the allegations that they make, they then go before the court, and the court hears only from the petitioner. As a matter of fact, when this is occurring, most respondents, in fact, every respondent I've ever represented, did not even know that the ex parte hearing was occurring. Why? Because it was happening almost instantaneously, and the petitioner in the court is under no duty to notify the respondent. If the court believes, by preponderance of evidence, that there is a reason to issue an order, the court will then issue a temporary red flag order, which is good in Washington state for a minimum of 14 days, could be extended longer. How does the respondent find out about that? Well, they usually find out when law enforcement shows up at their home with a copy of the red flag order, as well as an order to surrender all of their firearms and ammunition. So here we are, having a person being deprived of property who has yet to even have their day in court, was not put on notice nor given an opportunity to respond. Now, you're entitled by statute in Washington state to have a hearing on the full order within 14 days. However, realistically, the respondent now has to scramble around, find an attorney. The attorney, of course, has to get up to speed, understand what's going on, prepare their own case. And so typically, the permanent order hearing may not occur until 30 or 45 days following the issuance of the temporary order. And during that time, the respondent, again, is stripped of their Second Amendment rights. They cannot possess any firearm, any ammunition, and they, of course, have been ordered to surrender the concealed pistol license. Once again, all of this is occurring without the respondent ever having had an opportunity to state their side of the case to a court. But then we get to the final hearing, and one would think, okay, so now the respondent finally has the opportunity to present their side of the case. Well, sort of. Because in many jurisdictions in Washington state, they follow the same procedures as what's done in all other protection order hearings, civil anti-harassment order hearings, and other pissing contests. So what that means is rather than having live testimony, that is, rather than putting the petitioner on the witness stand and allowing respondents' counsel to cross-examine them to determine the veracity of their stories, their overall credibility, any potential bias that they may have, any way that you could effectively cross-examine them is taken from you, because many courts say, no, we're going to only do this by paperwork, which means the petitioner and any other witnesses could file any salacious allegations they want in declarations, and the respondent and any of their witnesses are basically left filing declarations saying everything in the petitioner's declarations is BS. How this is a meaningful opportunity to be heard is beyond me. I've spent now almost 25 years in the courtroom, either as a King County prosecuting attorney for a few years or now as a private defense attorney for the last 22 years. It is virtually impossible to cross-examine a piece of paper. And ultimately, if we end up with a piece of paper that says he did it and another piece of paper who said he didn't, we are left with the he said, she said. And where do you think the courts will err on the side of? So, yes. The greatest constitutional violation comes from one's Fifth Amendment rights to both substantive and, in particular, procedural due process, because a respondent will never receive notice before the temporary order goes into effect, and by the time they finally get around to doing a hearing on the full order, they may literally end up with one or both hands tied behind their back from a presentation of evidence standpoint. And finally, and perhaps even more scary than all of this, is I believe that red flag laws can also be used to suppress our First Amendment rights. You see, the standard for issuance of a red flag law in Washington State is that the respondent poses a threat to themselves or others by having access to firearms. That is the statutory burden of proof. How do individuals prove that? Well, the statute lists a litany of ways in which it can be proven, but acts of violence or threatened acts of violence certainly constitute two of the most primary grounds under which a court will order a red flag order. But let us not forget that according to at least one side of the political agenda, words and words alone constitute violence. Now, do I believe that? Absolutely not. Violence constitutes violence. Words constitute communication. But there is those in this country with a very progressive liberal agenda who have consistently tried to tread upon the freedoms provided to us in our First Amendment through freedom of speech and freedom of religion, freedom of association, and have it oftentimes talked about how words and words alone constitute violence. Therefore, if these laws are enacted and if they are implemented in the wrong fashion, does merely expressing your political or religious beliefs, which then offends somebody else, constitute violence and therefore an act upon which they can issue a red flag order? That should be one of our biggest concerns, because there is a clear plan in place to attack the First Amendment rights of anybody who speaks contrary to the mainstream progressive agenda. So, the bottom line is this. As someone who's practiced in a jurisdiction in which red flag laws have been in existence now for several years, do I believe that their heart was in the right place when they implemented these laws? For many of the legislators, I do. The problem, however, is in the implementation of these laws, because the manner in which these laws are implemented, the procedural mechanisms or lack thereof in place to ensure that people are provided with notice and a meaningful opportunity to be heard, are pathetic in many instances and absolutely, without a doubt, violate a person's Fifth Amendment rights to both substantive and procedural due process. This, coupled with the fact that it's an obvious violation of a person's Second Amendment rights and the ability to use these not as a shield but as a sword to attack one for their first exercise of their First Amendment rights, that is the reason that all of us around the country need to be very alarmed about the implementation of federal red flag laws. Listen, for more questions related to this or anything else about your Second Amendment rights, you can always contact us at WashingtonGunLaw.com, or of course you can call us directly at 425-765-0487. Now, let's remember, part of being a lawful and responsible gun owner, like we talk about all the time here at Washington Gun Law, is to know what the law is in every situation and how it applies to you in any instance that you may find yourself. Until next time, thanks for watching. Stay safe.
Okay, I'm going to disagree with him on one point. When he said that, do I believe a lot of these legislators' hearts were in the right places? He said, yeah, I believe a lot of them were. I don't. I absolutely do not. It doesn't take much scratching of the surface to see what these red flag gun laws are. And if any of them voted in favor, oh, because I think it's, you know, my heart's in the right place, bull. If you scratch the surface of the red flag gun law, none of it makes any sense to be able to put it into practice, because it is a massive violation of the of your constitutional rights. And of course, like he said, you know, which side do you think the court's going to go with? And again, that comes down to your status in relation to the federal government and even in the state level governments, is you are basically under their thumb, and that's how they look at you. But imagine this. Now, let's put the domestic violence, because, you know, we've all seen, like, psychotic girlfriends and psychotic boyfriends. You know, we've heard that story a million times. That is, to me, isn't where the real issue is. But when they say that law enforcement can issue a red flag gun laws on their, you know, a red flag violation on their own, where do you think that one's going? Now you're going to put it on the federal level. This is what this bipartisan bill does that we got sold out on by a bunch of these rhino traders in D.C. Where do you think that's going to go? Remember, look at who Biden's handlers are nominating for the ATF director. These guys are absolutely crooked, by the way, the whole ATF itself is. Okay, this guy, David Chipman, define an assault weapon. Well, I can't really, you know, you define, tell us what you think an assault weapon is. Well, I'm going to have to go with what the statute is and whatever. And because you know he doesn't have an answer for it. This new guy that they come, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but he's just as bad. He's just a little more slick. David Chipman was an absolute basket case, and he looked like one, and he acted like one. And he sounded like one. This new guy is a lot slicker. But he's still the same, he's still got the same problems. And the ATF is granting themselves authority that they don't have. They're a credit card. Oh, that's a fully automatic machine gun. We're going to take all those because we don't like the picture on it. And force reset triggers. Well, that's a fully automatic machine gun, so we're going to take those too. But they're going to put the red flag gun laws into the hands of one of the most corrupt, along with the IRS, one of the most corrupt government agencies in this country, which is the ATF. You think those guys are not going to sit there and start dropping red flag laws? And if they're not going to do it themselves, they're going to probably find somebody to do it. This is where the danger comes in. This is where they are. Our government is trying to deprive everybody of their firearms. Why? So they can run roughshod over them. Their problem is they got that pesky Second Amendment that's standing in the way. But if you want to see what the end result of this is, remember what the global government is trying to do. These globalist assholes like Klaus Schwab and his little butt boy Harari, George Soros, Bill Gates, and all the people, all the organizations and people that are even above them, and there are some. Okay, their entire mind headspace is bent on depopulating the planet. Let's go see what happens when you disarm a society. Ask the Armenians back in 1915. Ask the 1.5 million of them. Oh, you can't. They're dead. Ask 13 million people in Germany when Germany was steamrolling over Europe. Oh, you can't ask them. They're dead, too. Ask 40 million people in the Soviet Union when Lenin took over there and then Stalin started instituting. Ask 2.5 million Ukrainians. Oh, you can't. They're all dead, too. Let's ask the 100 million plus people in China. You can't. They're dead. One-third of the population of Cambodia, 300,000 Ugandans, and the list goes on and on and on and on after the population has been disarmed. This is what they're trying to do. For all the rhetoric and all the idiotic, oh, my God, think of the children. Don't ever do that to me. Don't ever drag the kids in front of it, because the second you say that, I know you're full of crap. Neck deep, full of crap. You got crap coming out your eyeballs. Okay, that's just an emotional pressure point. But when it comes to real solutions like school shootings or, you know, theater shootings or what, or shootings in churches, whatever, the real solutions to those problems, they don't want to hear those. How about we arm teachers? We put armed guards in the school. How about we, in the churches, we have people. There are people, remember, there was a while back, there was somebody tried to shoot up a church. And what happened? Well, people in the church were armed and they killed the guy before he could do any more damage. Put an end to it real quick. Can't have that. So that one didn't make the headline news for very long. Once the fake stream media figured out what happened, oh, okay, bury that. But we cannot, under any circumstances, allow our government to disarm the citizens. And they always come back with the same stupid bullshit saying, which is, we're not coming after your guns and we're not taking away your Second Amendment rights. We're just going to take away this one and then this one and then this one. A little bit more, move the goalpost, move it a little bit further and a little bit further until there's nothing left to take. Oh, but we allowed you to have a pea shooter, so, you know, you have your Second Amendment rights. It's like, our forefathers that put this country together knew the value of having armament that was as good or better than the military's. As a matter of fact, the militia in this country that fought in the Revolution did have better armament than the military's of Britain. The Brits were using muskets, which is, if you know anything about muskets, it's a smoothbore front loader, not very accurate. You know, it's accurate up to a certain distance. Well, the militiamen and I believe part of the Continental Army were using rifles. There's a big difference. If you ever look down the barrel of modern rifles, you'll see that there's grooves in there that go in a twist, and that's what the Revolution, the militia and the Continental Army were using. And you know what? They were hitting targets up to 400 yards away. A musket can't do that. A musket, its ball comes out, how it comes out, and it wobbles and does whatever. So, yeah, we need these arms to protect us against a tyrannical government. And it seems like it's getting more and more tyrannical all the time. You know, especially since, you know, the guy who's the figurehead keeps falling off his bike and crap in his pants and then not really realizing that his granddaughter isn't his son. But going back, you know, to where this whole idea of people being armed started. Go back to King Alfred, who became king in 1872, if I'm reading this right. All the English citizens, and I remember reading about this a long time ago, all the English citizens from the peasants on up had to have privately owned weapons and be available for military duty. Which they became the militia. And because the militia were pressed into service by England, France was defeated during the French and Indian War. And the same militia that was pressed into service by the Continental Congress that defeated the British and started this country. Now, again, you didn't have to join, but, you know, we had 3% of the population beat off the only world superpower at the time, I believe. And Patrick Henry, during the Virginia convention, when they were ratifying the Constitution, he came up and he said that the great object is that every man be armed. Everyone who is able may have a gun. Washington came up and said that firearms stand next in importance to the Constitution itself. They are the American people's liberty teeth and the keystone under independence. From the hour that the pilgrims landed to the present day, events and occurrences and tendencies prove that to ensure peace, security, and happiness, the rifle and pistol are equally indispensable. The very atmosphere of firearms everywhere restrains evil interference. They deserve a place of honor with all that is good. That's George Washington, the first president of our country. By the way, the greatest president of our country. Guy turned down being a king. When George Washington died, King George over in England actually flew the American flags. And yet now we have our own government, by the way, that swears an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, are basically wiping their ass with this document. This is our social contract with the federal government. This is what you can do. This is what you're not allowed to do. The stuff they're not allowed to do is way bigger than what they're allowed to do. And yet they keep doing it anyway. And then they create these agencies who eventually become armed. You want to know how armed they are? Oh, where is that one? Damn it, I just had it here. Where did that go? I just lost my... All right, let me bring this one back up again. This is a real kicker. Oh, come on. Where did it go? It just disappeared off of my computer. That's unbelievable. I just had that thing up, and now it's like completely disappeared off of everywhere that I just had it posted up. Let me try one more thing. If this don't work, I'll move on to something else. Wow, that is amazing. It's absolutely gone. About the IR. By the way, this... never mind. Here it is. Okay, I thought it disappeared, and it turned out it just, for whatever reason, got buried way down, and it disappeared off my headlines here. But going back to government agencies, by the way, that really don't need to be armed. For whatever reason, if you get into a bureaucracy in the federal government, they will always find a way to arm themselves because they will say, we have to have our guns and badges because, you know... Things, you know, because of things. So the IRS, under the current idiot in the Oval Office who cannot ride a bicycle, apparently, just spent between March and June, that's within a month, $700,000 purchasing ammo. Now, remember a few years ago, if anybody remembers all of this, not just the recent drought, but the back in... What was it, the 90s or early 2000s, our government bought 2 billion rounds of ammunition, 40 caliber, a lot of them, all hollow points. Somebody came up with a stupid excuse of, you're going to use it for the military. The military can't use hollow points. It's a violation of the Geneva Convention. You cannot use hollow points on the battlefield. This is why nobody does it. So the agents in the IRS Criminal Investigation Department are armed with weapons and therefore need ammo. That being the case, they bought $700,000 worth of it. And if you know how much ammo costs, you realize that's a hell of a lot of ammunition. That is probably, depending on which caliber they bought, is probably almost 2 million rounds of ammo. And depending if they get the government discount, well, then it's over 2 million rounds of ammunition. But if you go into usaspending.gov, you can see that they have numerous ammunition purchases over the last couple of years, you know, ranging between just over $3,000 to about 90, I think they say, I'm reading this right, $92,000. And they've been doing this for a while. According to a report from Forbes magazine, you know, however you want to trust them, So at the time in 2019, when this Forbes report came out, the IRS has 4,487 guns and over 5 million rounds of ammunition in its inventory, including fully automatic machine guns. Why? Why does the IRS need fully automatic machine guns? See, this is where I get a little bit bent, is the federal government can get machine guns for themselves. Now, I understand that the military needs them. Yeah, got no problem with that. All the power to them for having it. But a government agency, why do they need fully automatic machine guns? My opinion is, if you got fully automatic machine guns, then we should have fully automatic machine guns. Oh, but of course, we killed that with the unconstitutional National Firearms Act of 1934. And then they killed it again with the Machine Gun Act of 1986. And at this point, it is virtually impossible to get one. But they can have them. I wonder why the IRS, the banking collection agency, wants fully automatic machine guns. I can tell you why. Because they don't want any resistance to them collecting all their money while they're stealing all your shit. Period. So according to the Forbes article from 2009 to 2011, that's a couple of years, the IRS agents fired their guns accidentally more times than they did intentionally. Really bad training. And, of course, you got some trigger-happy yahoos in there, too. Criminal trigger-happy yahoos. Anybody who works for the IRS, to me, is a criminal. So they discharged their weapons in that period of time about 11 times. That doesn't sound like much, but, depending on what the damage that was done. They've only got a couple of thousand agents involved. Well, of course, Biden administration wants to add more. So with the few amount of employees that they have worldwide, by the way, they don't need that much ammo. Especially since, according to the article, the Forbes report, they don't fire their weapons all that much. They point them a lot. But if they don't fire them that much, why the hell do they need 5 million rounds of ammo and then spend an additional $700,000 of our taxpayer money to oppress us with these ridiculous tax burden that we shouldn't even have, which is completely unconstitutional anyway? Why? Because you enforce an unjust law, which, by the way, under Marbury versus Madison, is any law that is repugnant to the Constitution is null and void. Well, the only way that they can do it is by the using a gun to force you to do it. So Matt Gaetz, if you know who he is, he's a representative. Said there's only one reason why the IRS needs that many. They're trying to buy up all the ammunition so there's none left for you. Well, they're not going to do it by buying a couple of million rounds of ammo. They have to do what they did a few years back, and I'm not giving them any ideas. I would suggest they don't do it. But they're going to have to make an expenditure that's way beyond their budget. So, of course, they're going to go run into Congress. We need to expand our budget. But just look at what happened also during the last couple of years when they started locking everything down. Yeah, ammunition dried up off the shelves. They were getting tons of money for it if you could find it. And there's some places you still can't get what you need. It's been coming back slowly, but whatever. But Gaetz went on to say that there's a concern that this is part of a broader effort to have any entity in the federal government buy up the ammo to reduce the amount of ammunition that's in supply. Not that they've ever done that before. While at the same time making it harder to produce ammunition. So it's another end run around the Constitution. It's like, we're going to make everything illegal and we're going to deprive you of being able to defend yourself against a tyrannical government by buying up everything with your tax dollars, by the way. So you're paying for your own, again, your own suppression. And keep you from being able to just be able to be a free people. This is what they don't want. And by the way, all these morons in the minute or so that I got left who think that draconian gun control is going to work. Look at Jamaica. I'm not even going to talk about Chicago, but look at Jamaica. This article out of Mises. Okay, Jamaica apparently has some pretty strict gun control laws there. As far as I know, you ain't allowed to have one. But you know what? They still got them. And yes, there's still people out there shooting each other. And we're looking at how the people that Biden administration is letting into this country. The drug cartels are taking over the border because he's a weak. No, you know, I would say what I want to say, but I'd probably get in a little bit of trouble for saying it as much as I want to. But Jamaica's laws will show you perfectly. You're not going to get rid of the violence. You do what we used to do. Do what we used to do in this country. If you go out there, okay, yeah, you can have a gun. You go out there and you kill somebody. Guess what? Your life is forfeit. They used to hang people for stealing somebody's horse. And then when you get somebody out there says, we want the constitutional gun laws in our state, you know, constitutional carry and all that, the response is, it's going to be like the Wild Wild West. Here, I hate to break the news to you. The Wild Wild West was not even like the Wild Wild West. That's a Hollywood thing. You know, the drawing of the guns at high noon. Okay, that didn't really happen. So, anyway, we will be right back after the break, so stay tuned, everybody. I got some more good stuff coming at you.
It's no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Join me and the Brian Ruse Show on Revolution Radio, Eastern Standard Time, every Tuesday night from 6 to 8. We talk about the four most vital things, in my view, affecting all of humanity. Number one is UFOs and aliens and their agenda for the advancement of humanity. Number two is the Jewish establishment's control over all aspects of human civilization. Number three, the truth about Adolf Hitler, how he was the opposite of what we've been told. Number four is advanced ancient global civilizations. Join me on the Brian Ruse Show, Tuesday nights from 6 to 8 on Studio B on Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the Internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution Radio!
Welcome back, everybody. This is For Liberty. I am your host, Nick, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, revolution.radio, iTunes, Zeno.fm, Roku TV, and a whole bunch of others that I don't remember because I never write them down. I really got to get a secretary or something, or some kind of an assistant, I guess. My dogs don't make very good ones. Be sure to go to the homepage and sign up with Chatsy and get in the chat room and float some ideas around with everybody. And if you go to the ad section, if you see something you like, pick it up. If you got something for sale, well, pick up an ad spot. They're cheap compared to everywhere else. Reach a lot of people, and it helps keep us on the air. And as always, if you got some change laying around collecting dust, please send it our way. Unless it's from San Francisco, then please disinfect it first. Hit that donation button up at the top of the page. We are 100% listener supported, and we don't get a lot of money to lie to you the way fake stream media has been, and they've been on a roll lately, especially with that idiotic January 6th show trial that they actually had to pull because nobody was watching it. They hired a guy from Hollywood to produce it, and nobody watched it. The ratings are so bad that they yanked it off the air, and all it was a bunch of propaganda crap anyway. But I want to finish up with a couple of bits and pieces I didn't get to in the first hour, in regards to the Second Amendment, red flag gun laws, and the entire nightmare that they're trying to make this turn this country into. One of the things that was written in the Mises article about Jamaica's gun laws and everything. Here's one of the, and this is not an original idea. This is not an original study. John Lott, years ago, wrote this down in his book. And remember, John Lott, you got to understand who John Lott is. He's not a gun enthusiast. Matter of fact, I don't even think he really cares for them all that much, if I remembered. And it was a long time ago. I don't know how he feels about them now. But he wrote this book called More Guns, Less Crime. You got to remember who John Lott is. He's an analyst. That's what he does. He analyzes data, and he brings it in, puts it together, and says, hey, this is kind of what everything is. So when he wrote More Guns, Less Crime, he compiled data from FBI databases, crime databases, I believe from the CDC. I could be wrong about that. It's been a long time since I've looked at this book. But he pulled them in from all over the country, you know, different cities with their gun laws and rural areas with how they handled their firearms situation and all of that, and came to the conclusion that when you have a society that has less gun control laws aimed at the law-abiding citizens, you have less crime. Why? Because people don't want to get shot, and they've interviewed criminals in who were have been put in jail while they were in jail, and they said, "Well, what's when you break into a house, you know, or whatever it is you do, what's one of the worst things that you ever want to see happen?" He goes, "Have somebody come up and pull a gun on me. I don't want to get into a house where people have guns because they're going to shoot me." Criminals like an unarmed bunch of people. And you want to have a prime example of how that's going right now? Look at Los Angeles. People in L.A., pretty much in California altogether, you're not supposed to, but you know, you get out to the rural areas, who knows? But you get into the big cities, San Francisco, Sacramento, San Jose, San Diego, Los Angeles, you know, all the liberal strongholds. You cannot carry a gun, open, concealed, period. That doesn't stop the criminals from doing it. If you ever watch some videos, they'll shoot you for your damn dog. But they've clamped down on it on guns so much in Los Angeles that the criminals don't have any fear. They rob people in broad daylight in a restaurant. They just went around to the table, just showed their gun, and they started taking their wallets and everything. And people just gave it up. So, again, more guns, less crime. But you never, never get one of these communist ass bags in D.C. to admit it. And that's on the Republican side, too, by the way. Don't let the R after their name fool you. The Democrats pretty much tip their hand. We already know who they are. But the Republicans, same thing. A good many of them. Again, I can count on one hand any of them who are worth anything. But they brought this up in this Institute of Mises, that places that have more relaxed laws as far as firearms goes, there's less crime. Out where I live, we got crime, not like the cities, because people here don't want to get shot. So any excuse that they make to try to disarm citizens is absolutely ridiculous. And the red flag gun laws are one of the big ones. Let me see. Got to bring this one up. And we go back to those red flag laws, which are being pushed as, oh, it's going to save people's lives. No, it's going to get people killed. Not just to mention violating their constitutional rights. It's going to get people killed. And then what are they going to say? Oh, we got to blame the other gun. I remember in California, whenever the state legislature there decided to get a wild hair up their ass and go after the guns, what did they go after? Let's see. There used to be this company out there called Davis Arms. They made small. I mean, I didn't care for them that much. They're too small for me, but they made these things they called Saturday Night Specials. And they were just very small caliber pistols, semi-automatic pistols. Those are the guns that the criminals prefer. We got to get rid of them. And what happened? Davis Arms, due to overregulation, went out of business. Well, then it became a 50 caliber PMG, the gun that the criminals use. They're going to start shooting down police helicopters, which, by the way, has never happened in the U.S. Nobody's ever taken a 50 caliber and shot down a police helicopter, or any helicopter for that matter. But that suddenly became the favorite gun of criminals. So which was it? Was it the little tiny 25? Or the little 32 that Davis Arms had, or was it the big monster 50 caliber BMG? Well, they couldn't make up their mind, so they got rid of both of those. And now it's the AR-15. It's the preferred weapon of criminals. Criminals don't use, for the most part, You know, your local thugs. I'm not talking about the people that go out and shoot places up. I'm talking about your local gangs, your local sites. Don't bring out AR-15s. You ever try walking around L.A. with an AR-15? The cops will shoot you dead in a heartbeat. Most criminals are trying to be low-key or as low-key as they can. You're not going to carry around a rifle. And, you know, it's ridiculous, but it's a preferred weapon of the criminals. And then what's going to be next? Oh, hand grenades are the preferred weapons of the criminals. They had that idiot police chief. I don't remember which one it was. I want to say Beck, but I'm not sure. So don't quote me on that. But they did a gun buyback, you know, which, by the way, in and of itself is a misnomer anyway, because the government never owned those guns in the first place. They can't buy them back from you. But they did one of those stupid things, and people were turning in all kinds of whatever. And somebody turned in a spent rocket launcher, a rocket tube, which even the ATF, the corrupt group that they are, says that those aren't illegal because you cannot reload them. It's a one-time use deal. And what did he do? The police chief of Los Angeles held it up and said, these are the kinds of weapons we're taking off the streets. What a laughingstock that guy was. But back to the red flag laws. I keep drifting off into tangents here. But the Pennsylvania governor, a guy named Tom Wolf, far-left liberal Democrat, communist, ass bag, of course, is coming out and saying that social media posts could lead to gun confiscation under the red flag laws. So he came up and he started, did some kind of graphic, I guess on whatever social, I guess on Twitter or whatever, put up a graphic showing how U.S. citizens posting photos of guns on social media, along with cryptic messages, in quotes, could lead to a court confiscating their guns under the proposed red flag legislation that he supports. There you go, violation of First, not only your Second, Fourth, Fifth Amendment, but now your First Amendment as well. So he comes out and he says that red flag laws allow us to take action when someone who has a gun begins to act erratically. Okay, define erratically. Because I know people who act erratically. I've had to work around some of those people. But when the government gets involved, the definitions start to change. And they start expanding it. They start painting with a very broad brush. What happens when acting erratically... is basically disagreeing with what the government says, like, I'm not wearing a mask. Oh, you're erratic and you're out of control. I believe in the Constitution and the Second Amendment. Oh, look at you. You've got to go see a psychiatrist. You're mental. You're taking your guns. So on his social media he said this could include online posts. So red flag laws will still require due process. No, see, they don't. That's the whole thing about red flag laws. They don't require due process. So right there he's lying to us. Right there he's lying to the people of Pennsylvania. And any removal of weapons is temporary. There's another lie, because good luck getting them back. I've had to go through the process of getting one of my guns back from the police department. You know what I had to do? I had to go all the way. It was like buying a gun all over again. I had to go through and get a background check, had to have that paperwork in hand to go to the police department, show them, yep, see, I'm still a good guy here, so, you know, can I have my gun back? Oh, yeah, you can have the gun, but you can't have the bullets. You can't have the ammunition. You've got to lock it up in a box with a lock on it, which is how you have to travel around California. If you want to carry a firearm, it has to be locked up. Ammunition away from it, of course. So your gun is basically nothing more than a hammer. So I've had to go through that process. Yeah, temporary, my ass. You are going to be jumping through hoops. And this is Pennsylvania, so I'm not sure what their laws are there, but I'm pretty sure they're probably just as bad. And of course, he got on top of the Republic. I don't know why people get on, the Democrats get on the Republicans. They're both working on the same side of the aisle. They just pretend they're not. So this is what the governor. This is, by the way, isn't just him. It's probably going to be like, even if the federal government gets this stuff passed through, and it looks like they will because we got the traitors in the Senate, but they've got to send this back to the House in order to get, you know, to do the reconciliation of the bill. But if they get it, okay. So what if I go on social media and I say, I can't stand Joe Biden. He's an effing idiot who can't ride a bicycle, craps his pants. And he should be removed from office due to mental incompetence. Is that gonna start red flagging me? I guarantee it probably will. I mean, I've been kicked off of Facebook for a hell of a lot less than that. What are they gonna say? Oh, you wrote hate speech on your social media account. Oops, red flag right there. I can't stand drag queen story hour. Take his guns. I don't like drag queens flashing their junk at little kids. Right there, intolerance, take his guns, red flag, he might do something. You know, that's to me, it seems like the road that we're headed down. And the problem is, too, is that people are going along with it. Stop going along with these liberal effing morons. You know, there's a whole thing that was going on when COVID was still a thing. They keep trying to make it a thing. It's not a thing anymore. It's just kind of went to the wayside. You know, we've got the Ukraine to worry about now, and Fauci's out there still trying to push his crap, but whatever. But people that go along with any of this, these screaming idiot libtards that are out there screaming, oh my God, guns are offensive, and a case in point, and I think this just, when was this put up? Matter of fact, this was just yesterday that this was posted. Christy Clark, who is a communist candidate for the North Carolina House District, you know, North Carolina House, the Assembly. By the way, who prefers she and her pronouns? So you got to make sure you get that right. Got bent out of shape because this supermarket, or two supermarkets, by the way, they were selling these, you know what a beer cozy is? It's that little foam thing you stick your beer in to keep it cold, or, you know, your soda, whatever. You know, it's a can fits right in it. Well, the two of them had pro-gun messages on it. So she called up their store. And told them to please remove those from the shelves because they're offensive to me. They're insensitive. And Kroger should have told her to go pound sand, but, you know, Kroger supermarkets are what Kroger supermarkets are. And she wrote this thing. I mean, it's not even something I would have, if I had the store, I wouldn't have even paid attention to it. Oh, I'm disappointed that these cozies are being sold in the North Carolina store. 110 Americans die every day from gun violence. Wrong. And most recently, children, educators, and healthcare providers were killed in mass shootings. Wada, please remove them. And you know what? They did. By the way, this is what was on the things. There was one that had a bald eagle holding onto a shotgun and said, give me liberty or give me death. Another one had Thomas Jefferson on it holding an AR-15 that says, arms change, rights don't. Which is true. Our founding fathers knew that already. So she got all bent out of shape, and then they took them out of their stores, and it's like, we got to stop going along with this absolute insanity that the left is right. They pushed it as hard as they could for 6 years now, where ever since Donald Trump got elected, they lost their collective damn minds. They went into what's known as, oh, hell, I forget what the name is. It's like a mass hypnosis. And they all go along with it, and it all it does is serve to step on our rights. Because, you know, they're worried about them being offended, and they're using their pronouns right now. Never mind what the rest of us think. By the way, they are a very small minority of people, so why do we care? Let them, if that's what they want to do, fine. I don't give a rat's ass. But don't start pushing it on the rest of us, especially when it starts trampling all over my rights, or anybody else's for that matter. You know, that's what a republic is. But, of course, you know, we don't live in a republic. We live in a democracy. Yeah, try to get them to fix that one. They won't believe you. But then, of course, they all follow along Saul Alinsky's playbook. You know, in case you want, by the way, you want to know what those are, his 8 steps to socialism. By the way, and Karl Marx said this pretty good. Socialism is just a stepping stone to communism. So don't let any of these people saying, I'm a socialist, fool you. They're communists. Period. There is no in-between. They're on the totalitarian side of the scale. Communism, socialism, and fascism are all on the totalitarian side of the political scale. Of course, on the other side, you have complete anarchy. So you figure out what part of the scale you want to be on. But totalitarianism has never, ever worked out. But so Saul Alinsky's 8 steps to socialism, and it's important everybody know this so they know how to recognize it. Number one, you got to take over healthcare. Well, Rockefellers already did that back over 100 years ago, and our healthcare system has been an absolute disaster, and especially in the last 2 years. Do what we say, and then maybe we'll let you get out of your house, and you're going to be forced to take the vax to get a job, and we're going to make money off of you while you die. The next step, poverty. And I don't think these things are in order. It's just the way that it's written out here. Poverty. You got to increase the poverty level to as high as possible. And look what's happening now. Because poor people are easier to control and they won't fight back if you are providing everything for them to live. And that's not new. That's something that's been going on for a while. You look at the whole welfare system in this country. You know, people became very dependent on entitlements. You also need, by the way, the national debt. You need to increase the debt to an unsustainable level. That way you're able to increase taxes, and this will produce more poverty. Look at our national debt. And I have yet to have my damn congressman or my senator address that. While this country is going tits up on our economy, he's busy signing on to having $40 billion handed over to the Ukraine. Meanwhile, gas is like, oh, it's only up like, what, 30%? No, it's up over 100%. So is everything else. That's the realism of it. Of course, again, here's Alinsky. Gun control. You have to remove the ability for people to defend themselves from the government. That way you can create a police state. What have I been talking about for the last hour and a half? Implement welfare so that way you can take control of every aspect, food, housing, and income, which they've been trying to do here for a while. Education, you got to take control of what people read and listen to and what the kids learn in school. That's the big one. We know our education system sucks, so they've already got that one. That was what the Rockefellers put in the Department of Education for. They got to take over religion. You got to remove the belief in God from the government and the schools. This is why they kept coming up. Remember that big propaganda campaign. Separation of church and state. Well, read how the Constitution was written. That was never part of it. And then, of course, the last one, you always have to have class warfare. You got to divide the people into the wealthy and the poor. And this is going to cause more discontent. It's going to be easier to take taxes from the wealthy with the support of the poor. What do you look at, like, all these communist little front groups that George Soros is funding? They're running around the country. Oh, we got to tax the rich. Yeah, you know what the rich are going to do? They're going to take their money and move. If it gets bad enough, they'll just take their money and move. So that everything that, you know, when you know these things and you'll understand why the country is going the way it is. Remember, Hillary Clinton is a disciple of Saul Alinsky. Thank God she's not running again. Joe Biden, he doesn't remember being a disciple of Saul Alinsky. He's too busy falling off his bike. But this is their playbook. That, and by the way, this is the playbook not for the people at the top. The people at the top are running a whole different game, and they're using this as their to control the people. And by the you control what people think in here. This is the whole propaganda. Right now, California is passing a bill, is trying to pass a bill to punish doctors and nurses if they come up and they speak against the official narrative of the healthcare system. And by the way, it's sponsored by this guy named Senator Pan. I remember him when I was living in California. The guy is an absolute worthless hunk of crap. He is a big farmer's butt boy. He gets paid a lot of money to introduce ridiculous damn bills. He's got ties to the Chinese Communist government. You know, the whole, you run this guy's name and you'll see everything. He absolutely despises this country. So when the problems that were coming up with the COVID vax, with the mRNA shots and everything, he proposed a law that says you cannot speak up against the COVID shots. And it put into it, this is what it says. This is the cut that I got. The people of the state of California do enact as follows. The legislature finds and declares all of the following, because, you know, they're so good at what they do. That the global spread of COVID has claimed the lives of over, now they're saying 6 million people worldwide. They love that 6 million number, including nearly 90,000 Californians. Okay, I'd like to see the data on that. Data from the Federal Centers for Disease Control, you know, the CDC, show that the unvaccinated individuals are at risk of dying from COVID that is 11 times greater than those who are fully vaccinated. Here's the problem with that. All the evidence shows exactly the opposite. The people who are getting sick are the people who took the vaccine. The unvaccinated are staying healthier at a much greater rate. But, you know, if they codify that into law, you can't say anything about it. The last part, the safety and efficacy of COVID-19 vaccines has been confirmed through evaluation by the FDA, and the vaccines continue to undergo intensive safety monitoring by the CDC. Now, that sounds like a Facebook fact check to me. This is why they're fake. This is why these things are fake. And if they put it into law, the doctors and nurses won't be able to say anything about it. But this is why they're fake. The death count figures that they cited, they're way overestimated by the hospitals for failing to distinguish dying from COVID versus dying with COVID. We already know all of that. The efficacy of vaccines has declined over time and with the new variants. And CDC has consistently failed to show follow up on serious safety, apart from myocarditis, and the post-market and surveillance data required showed that serious safety issues in the first 3 months of the vaccine rollout. No, we've been watching people drop dead of heart attacks, and they're saying that there's no problem, that it had nothing to do with the vaccine. But any physician who raises these points or anything else that's inconvenient to this law could be disciplined by the medical board. It shall constitute unprofessional conduct for a physician and a surgeon to disseminate misinformation or disinformation related to COVID-19, including false or misleading information regarding the nature and risks of the virus, its prevention, treatment, so on and so on. So they're saying that you have to shut up, push the official narrative, and otherwise we're going to make sure that you're not a doctor anymore. And, of course, Fauci got into it with Rand Paul. Let me see if I can find that one about the whole thing, where he actually had to admit that vaccines were no good for kids. Okay, let me run this ad out first. And, of course, Fauci, God knows why we ever even listened to that guy. Why anybody listened to that guy. His entire career has been based on destroying your immune systems. And now, therefore, again, in violation of your constitutional rights, violation of Nuremberg laws and everything else, they're trying to, and they're still trying to say that, you know, this whole thing is still a big pandemic. There was never a damn pandemic, ever. But here's Fauci and Rand Paul sparring, and Fauci just comes off sounding like a complete idiot, as he usually does. Yes, I'm going to torture you with a little bit of Fauci.
Dr. Fauci, the government recommends everybody take a booster over age 5. Are you aware of any studies that show reduction in hospitalization or death for children who take a booster?
Right now, there's not enough data that has been accumulated, Senator Paul, to indicate that that's the case. I believe that the recommendation that was made was based on the assumption that if you look at the morbidity and mortality of children within each of the age groups, you know, 0 to 5, 5 to 11.
Right. So there are no studies, and Americans should all know this. There are no studies on children showing a reduction in hospitalization or death with taking a booster. The only studies that were permitted, the only studies that were presented, were antibody studies. So they say, if we give you a booster, you make antibodies. Now, a lot of scientists would question whether or not that's proof of efficacy of a vaccine. If I give you 10, or if I give a patient 10 mRNA vaccines and they make protein each time, or they make antibody each time, is that proof that we should give 10 boosters, Dr. Fauci?
No, I think that is somewhat of an absurd exaggeration.
Well, that is the proof that you use. Your committees use that. That's the only proof you have to tell children to take a booster is that they make antibodies. So it's not an absurdity. You're already at like 5 boosters for people. You've had, you know, 2 or 3 boosters. It's like, where is the proof? Now, I think there is probably some indication for older folks that have some risk factors. For younger folks, there's not. But here's the other thing. There are some risk factors for the vaccine. So the risk of myocarditis with a second dose for adolescent boys 12 to 24 is about 80 in a million. This is both from the CDC and from the Israeli study. It's also in the VAERS study, remarkably similar for boys, much higher from boys than girls and much higher than the background. The background's about 2 per million. So there is risk, and there are risks, and you're telling everybody in America just blindly go out there because we made antibodies. So it is not an absurd corollary to say if you have 10. In fact, you probably make antibodies if you get 100 boosters. All right? That's not science. That's conjecture, and we should not be making public policy on it.
So, Senator Paul, if I might respond to that, we just heard in his opening statement Ranking Member Burr talk about his staff who went to Israel. And if you look at the data from Israel, the boosts, both the third shot boost and the fourth shot boost, was associated with a clear-cut clinical effect, mostly in elderly people, but also as they gathered more data, even in people in the 40s and the 50s. So there is clinical data.
But not in children.
Well,
see, here's the thing is, you're not willing to be honest with the American people. So, for example, 75% of kids have had the disease. Why is the CDC not including this in the data? You can ask the question. You can do laboratory tests to find out who's had it and who hasn't had the disease. What is the incidence of hospitalization and death for children who've been infected with COVID subsequently going to the hospital or dying? What is the possibility if your kid has had COVID, which is 75% of the country's had COVID, what is the chance that my child's going to the hospital or dying?
If you look at the number of deaths in pediatrics, Senator, you can see that there are more deaths
of people who have had it, of people who have had the disease.
Senator, we also know from other studies that the optimal degree of protection when you get infection is to get vaccinated after infection. And in fact, showing reinfection in the era of Omicron and the sublineages, that vaccination...
But you can't answer the question I asked. The question I ask is how many kids are dying and how many kids are going to the hospital who've already had COVID? The answer may be zero, but you're not even giving us the data because you have so much wanted to protect everybody from all the data because we're not smart enough to look at the data. When you released data earlier, when the CDC released the data, they left out the category of 18 to 49 on whether or not there was a health benefit for adults 18 to 49. Why was it left out? When critics finally complained, it was finally included because there was no health benefit from taking a booster between the 18 to 49 and the CDC study. Another question for you. The NIH continues to refuse to voluntarily divulge the names of scientists who receive royalties and from which companies. Over the period of time from 2010 to 2016, 27,000 royalty payments were paid to 1,800 NIH employees. We know that not because you told us, but because we forced you to tell us through the Freedom of Information Act. Over $193 million was given to these 1,800 employees. Can you tell me that you have not received a royalty from any entity that you ever oversaw the distribution of money in research grants?
Well, first of all, let's talk about royalties.
That's the question. No, that's the question. Have you ever overseen, Senator, have you ever received a royalty payment from a company that you later oversaw money going to that company?
You know, I don't know as a fact, but I doubt it.
Well, here's the thing is, why don't you let us know? Why don't you reveal how much you've gotten and from what entities? The NIH refuses. Look, we ask them. We ask them. The NIH, we ask them whether or not, who got it and how much. They refuse to tell us. They sent it redacted. Here's what I want to know. It's not just about you. Everybody on the vaccine committee, have any of them ever received money from the people who make vaccines? Right. Can you tell me that? Can you tell me if anybody on the vaccine approval committees ever received any money from people who make the vaccines?
Soundbite number one, are you going to let me answer a question? Okay, so let me give you some information. First of all, according to the regulations, people who receive royalties are not required to divulge them even on their financial statement, according to the Bayh-Dole Act.
Okay, I got enough. That's enough of that guy. He's just basic. He's just lying out his ass like he always does. He doesn't want to answer any questions. And I don't have to answer the question because, yeah, did Anthony Fauci receive any money from Big Pharma? Yes. Everybody knows that he was getting cash. Everybody knows because he got caught last time Rand Paul questioned him, lying about the gain of function research and the money that was going to Wuhan. Now we find out that we've been financing 46 different bio labs in the Ukraine. Gee, I wonder why they want to protect that place so much. This guy is an absolute scumbag. He should be being put on trial at this point. He's not there to help anybody. And telling them, like, well, don't worry about the kids. And then he came up with a retarded-ass statement, which was, you know, the vaccines help you after you've already had COVID. No, they don't. Once you had COVID, you've already got built up a natural immunity to it. It's done. No, but what is a Big Pharma pimp butt boy doing there? He's out there pushing the vaccines just like his Big Pharma bosses are telling him to. That's all he does. His entire career is made up of destroying your health, just like not just Big Pharma, but the medical association does in America, because that's what the Rockefellers made them do. They don't want you to be healthy. They want you sick. And this stupid POS, I love it when he argues with Rand Paul, because Rand Paul, number one, is way smarter than he is. And he's number two, he's a doctor too. He can't bullshit Rand Paul. Kerry Mullis talked about what a massive liar Anthony Fauci is. And yet for some reason, this guy is still head of the NIAID and gives direction to the CDC. This guy needs to be kicked the hell out, kicked to the curb, put in prison for crimes against humanity, for doing the gain-of-function research that he said he wasn't doing, and even though paperwork says that he has been. This guy is an absolute scumbag. I wouldn't take a nickel from this guy. I'd feel him probably be contaminated with something. I wouldn't want to get his germs on me at all. And by the way, he's all yakking, talking about how effective the vaccines are. Well, he's been double vaxxed and double boosted afterwards, and he still got COVID. How effective are those damn things? And that's where we're at with this guy. This is not just him, but the whole health system in America anyway. And yet they constantly got their cheerleaders on the fake stream media running, oh, you got to get the vaccines and the boosters, otherwise you're going to kill grandma. You know, screw the hell with you people. How the hell does anybody believe anything the government tells you? They lie about the guns. They lie about your health care. They lie about the war in Ukraine. They lied about the whole war in Afghanistan, which was another big money laundering gig. Hey, they tell you the sky is blue. Do yourself a favor. Go outside and check for yourself. They lie about things that you can see right in front of your face, and they tell you, no, you're not seeing that. Don't worry about it. No, it's right here. No, you know, you're not seeing it. That's where it's at. This is why people don't trust the government at all anymore. We're tired of being lied to by these assholes. Tired of it. Sick to death of it. Kids have been dying. Athletes have been dying. Now we've got sudden adult death syndrome. If you remember, it used to be sudden infant, you know, when they call it SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome. Now it's SADS. Because these vaccines are killing everybody. They haven't done the research on it, and he's telling everybody that they did. No, we are. You're seeing the research right now. Oh, let's see what it does in this group of people. Oh, that only killed half of them. So, yeah, we guess we can write that up as good. And let's get that thing out on the market and start shoving it into people. I wouldn't trust the VA to save my life at this point, because that, you know, that's where my primary health care is. I wouldn't go to a hospital, because they're probably going to, oh, we got to test you for COVID, and we're going to find out that you have it, and then we're going to start sticking you with all kinds of crap. It's like, I don't care if I was dying. I would be like, too bad. I guess it's my time. But I ain't going to the hospital and letting you soak me for a bunch of money to do it. The hell with these pieces. This government is so completely un-effing believable. And by the way, Fauci was there when Trump was in office, so I can't cut Trump a break on that one either. Fauci's just been there for – he screwed up the whole AIDS epidemic when that was going on by giving people drugs that actually made the AIDS worse, you know, made the HIV infections worse. This guy is an absolute clown, and yet he somehow gets paid over $400,000 a year by the government, by our tax dollars, and then is getting whatever kicks he's getting on the back end of everything to push these vaccines that don't work. They're not even vaccines anyway. They're gene modification therapy. What, you know, absolutely ridiculous. They're pulling clots out of people that aren't even made out of blood. They're made out of these protein chains. And that are killing people. And yet somehow we're supposed to listen to people in our government saying, oh, we're here to help you. It's like, sorry, but I'm going to take Ronald Reagan's advice. You know, the scariest words in the English language. I'm from the government and I'm here to help. I don't want your help. Nobody should want their help. They do not have your best interests in mind. As a matter of fact, they got quite the opposite at this point. And take away your right of self-defense, and then they can just pretty much do whatever they want to you. Which is why they're pushing the gun control issue so hard. But I got to play this one last bit before we go off the air. This is an old film, so you're gonna kind of recognize how. It's like kind of one of those 1950s, you know, duck and cover kind of things. But this one is about propaganda and the different how it works and bits. And this is an old black and white thing, but it's worth listening to. So if nothing else, to help you recognize propaganda when you see it. And this is very basic. Propaganda is subtle in ways that you can't even even imagine. I mean, especially subliminals, you know, even down to colors make people react a certain way. But so take a listen to this, and you can probably get at the very least, if you don't know propaganda to techniques that well, this will give you a kind of a rudimentary understanding of it all. And if you really want to figure it out, read anything by Edward Bernays and read the early some of the early filmmakers like Sergei Eisenstein and how they came up with film language that gets people to react a certain way. And by the way, that translated well over into the advertising market and a whole bunch of other things. It's really some in-depth stuff, but this one's pretty good for what it is. So have a listen to it.
Merely a victory for good government, Mr. Brown? Or was it a victory for...
Perhaps I can help you, Chuck. I think the election was a victory for good government. It might also be called a victory for propaganda. But that would have been equally true if our opponent had won.
But that's what I mean. Everybody uses propaganda.
Oh, no, not everybody, Chuck. But propaganda is an important force in our society today. That's why, besides using propaganda, I've been studying it for some years. Propaganda skillfully employed to turn millions of men to a cruel hatred of their fellow men. And propaganda often persuades us to help our fellow men. The products of our factories are also known around the world through propaganda in the form of advertising and salesmanship. The study of history reveals a great deal of propaganda that has been used to fight wars and win wars. Propaganda can also be used for peace.
So you see, Chuck, propaganda is important. Well worth any time you give study. I see that. But how can you study it?
Well, you can begin by investigating the techniques of propaganda. Here, I've listed some of the main ones. Glittering generalities, transfer, name-calling, card stacking, testimonial, plain folks, and bandwagon. You'll find these techniques used in many places, in many ways, for many different purposes. Your job is to recognize them when you see them.
My first job is to understand what they mean. What is a glittering generality?
Well, let me see. That headline you were quoting, A Victory for Good Government. Good government is a phrase we use many times during the campaign. We said the mayor stood for good government and promised good government.
But it's true, isn't it?
What's true? What does good government mean? Is the mayor's idea of good government the same as yours?
I see. It's a glittering generality.
One of the best.
There's another.
Yes. And why do you suppose our opponents chose that phrase?
I guess because everybody likes a real American.
Right. And they wanted to transfer that liking for a real American to Mr. Butler.
And that's what you mean by the technique of transfer.
That's it.
Now let's see if you can recognize another technique. A day or so after that poster came out, I said in one of my campaign speeches, our opponent advertises himself as a real American. I say he is unreal, unrealistic. He is a visionary, a theorist, a dreamer. He is so thirsty for public office that like a weary traveler in the desert, he sees a mirage and he is trying to sell it to you as real. There. Now, what would you call that?
That's name-calling, visionary, theorist, dreamer.
That's right. And those are very polite names. But now I want you to listen to something else. For my collection of propaganda materials, I've made a special record of part of one of Mr. Butler's radio speeches.
Mayor Cooper asks that he be judged by his performance in office. Very well. Let's ask him who was mayor when the municipal waterworks fell into such a state of disrepair that the whole town was without water for 2 days. Let's ask him. But no, let's not. It might embarrass him.
You recognize the technique?
No, I don't.
It's a tricky one.
Is it true about the waterworks?
Partly true. That's what we call card stacking. Cooper was mayor when the pumping station broke down, but it was the men in office before him who allowed it to get into such a rundown condition, and it finally gave way before he could get anything done.
I see. And card stacking is choosing some facts and leaving out others and arranging them to suit your purpose.
That's the idea. Now, did you see our little campaign movie?
Yes, a couple of times.
Well, let's look at it again as an example of propaganda techniques.
It was a testimonial, wasn't it?
Yes, we used other techniques, too. See if you can spot them. Will you get the light, please?
Oh, sure.
Land sakes. A body hardly has time enough. The house to clean, and the washing to do, and the men folks to feed. They like their chocolate cake, too. But I do want to take time to tell you that I've known Dick Cooper ever since he was knee-high to a grasshopper. He comes of a good, respectable family, just as honest as the day is long. He knows our town. He's one of us. That's why I'm going to vote for Mayor Cooper. And all my friends are going to vote for him, too.
We'll stop a minute, Chuck. Recognize the technique?
That must be what you call plain folks.
That's right. You'll find many versions of the appeal based on the common man on the street, log cabin to president. Now let's look at the rest of the movie.
Yes, Mrs. Hamline is voting for Mayor Cooper. Her friends are voting for Mayor Cooper. Your friends are voting for Mayor Cooper. The people know what they want, and what they want is Mayor Cooper. Don't you be left behind. Get on board the Victory Special. Vote for Mayor Cooper and ride with him to victory.
That ending's easy to spot. It's the bandwagon.
Yes, the propaganda we've been talking about is easy to detect. But a great deal of propaganda is much more hidden, much harder to detect.
That's what's bothering me. Even in a small local election, there's so much propaganda. That poster, a real American, it uses a transferred device. Does that mean it isn't true?
Not necessarily. Evaluating propaganda isn't that simple. Recognizing the technique is one step. Another step is to know the purpose. What is the purpose here?
That's easy. To get people to vote for Butler.
Yes, to persuade people that Butler is the better man, to move them to vote for him. In short, to sell Mr. Butler to the voters. You'll find that the purpose of most propaganda is to persuade people to believe something, to do something, or to buy something.
All right. But it still doesn't answer my question.
No. Your next step, and it's a big one, is to get the facts.
Well, is he a real American?
Howard Butler was born in this country. He obeys its laws. He's a good citizen. Yes, he is a real American. The same can be said for Richard Cooper. So ask yourself whether the facts support the purpose. Do they support the transfer of feeling from real American to Mr. Butler over Mr. Cooper?
No, I guess not.
Well, that's your fourth step. Weigh the facts against the purpose and the technique.
I think I understand. To know whether propaganda is good or not, whether it's true or not, I should know the purpose, recognize the technique, get the facts, and judge the purpose and technique by the facts.
But when you want the facts about live political battle, don't come to a campaign manager.
I might do it at that. But I will also go and see your opposition.
Well, that's all right. Whenever you're tracking down propaganda, get as many different points of view as you can.
You know something?
What?
I think that it might be interesting to make a really serious study of propaganda.
I find it interesting, and there's plenty to study. Here I have just a few of the many books on the subject. You can read them. You can keep your eyes and ears open for little bits of propaganda. And, of course, you can study whole propaganda campaigns.
All right, I'm going to cut it there. It's only got a little less than a minute left. But you get the idea, and especially since we're gearing up to an election, you can see this stuff all over the place, especially that one with the lady, what they call the common lady. Because you see our politicians, they go out there and they put on their brand new clothes without even taking the tags off it and stand out there in the middle of a construction site like, look, I'm part of the people. When you're, no, you're really not. You see it with the whole gun control debate. You see all that propaganda being pushed. Guns are bad. These guns are scary, so we have to get rid of those and so on. I already went over that ad nauseum in the first hour of the show. But these are just some of the techniques that they use, and learn to recognize them. Our politicians use them all the time in very little variations of them. And it's all designed to snow job you. I mean, when he talked about the one guy who said he put on his campaign sign, a real American, it really wasn't to say that they're going like, well, I'm a real American. Well, of course you're a real American. You're born here, whatever. But it's to make it look like, well, maybe the other guy isn't really so much of a real American. Maybe he doesn't like it, like this country as much as I do. I'm the better guy. And they're both, and as we can see from the Republicans and the Democrats, they're both basically lying their asses off to you. And if you really want to see a good example of propaganda, look at any of Leni Riefenstahl's film that promoted the Nazi Party in Germany. Anyway, that's the show for tonight. I will see you guys Friday in Granada Forum. Have a good one, everybody. And remember, if you can't be good, be bad. Bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.
What the heck is the truth, Jihad? Hey, I'm Kevin Barrett, host of Truth Jihad Radio. Federal prosecutors, Department of Homeland Security agents, and curious passersby often ask me, just what is this Truth Jihad thing anyway? Well, everybody knows what truth is, but jihad is a misunderstood term. Jihad means effort or struggle. The greater jihad is the struggle to be a better person, while the lesser jihad is the struggle to defend the community. Prophet Muhammad, peace upon him, did say that the best jihad is a word of truth flung in the face of a tyrant. And that's what we do here at Truth Jihad Radio. Every Friday, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, 5 to 7 Pacific, right here on Revolution Radio.
Are you interested in the paranormal? Murder mystery? Real natural law? Do you enjoy interviews with amazing guests? Then join Crypt Rick
every Monday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Revolution Radio. Studio A, freedomslips.com. Crypt Riffs, Ivan, thank you. Welcome to the Crypt.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.